Good morning, bitches. Yes, you got to start your day with a little bit of an insult to make sure that you're tough enough to handle all the other shit that's going to fly your way on a Monday morning. This is the Gareth Cliff Show on our new home, The Real Network, and we are coming to you live out of Sandton, Johannesburg. Very exciting. I have my collaborator and evil mastermind, Leanne Moll, here with me today. Isn't that great? How was your weekend?
Yeah, all good. You briefly said earlier that yours was really, really busy.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, even if I had something to tell you, I think I'm going to have to leave space for yours.
Well, okay, I'm going to give you the pricey version because otherwise we'll be here all morning. And who wants to hear about someone's weekend in minute detail when they weren't part of it? It's like those people who pitch up and start telling you about their holiday and then show you every picture on their phone of every boring thing that they saw. And really, most people's holidays are boring. You know why? You weren't there.
Yeah.
Right. So I have a very good friend who's out here from Texas. I mentioned the other day, he's my cleverest friend. Like, we've known each other since varsity. And he came out here for work. His long-suffering wife and kids are in Texas waiting for him. But he managed to spend some time with us. So there was a whole group of us who were at varsity together. And we managed to have like a pretty good reunion of kinds on a Friday. And he stayed with me on Friday night and last night. But I was really pleased that I could get his visit to coincide with the visit of the very brilliant Eric Weinstein, who's in South Africa. This guy is just a different level of smart. And to see the two of them, as I did last night, talking at this dinner, he specially delayed his flight back, my friend, so he could spend time with Eric. And to see the two of them talking and kind of figuring out very complex things made me very happy.
I remember we spoke about this last week and we said, okay, so you're getting them into a room together. Where do they start when their minds are so full of stuff? Did they just start casually?
So it's so funny. I said to Eric, because I interviewed him yesterday, and that interview will be available soon on the podcast party. I'll give you all the details. And by the way, I interviewed Zuby. For those people who are interested, Zuby is a rapper and a very big free thinker. He's from the UK, originally born in Nigeria. He grew up in Saudi Arabia. I mean, what a fascinating guy this is.
Sure.
That interview is available also on the podcast party. I will tweet out the link a little bit later on, but you can go and find it in my feed if you're interested. Well worth listening to Zuby. Very, very talented guy with some interesting insights into identity and things like that. Anyway, I interviewed Eric yesterday and I said to him at the beginning, look, I don't get nervous about interviewing people anymore. I've done a lot of these things and I've met some phenomenal people. It's the best job in the world in some respects. It's the university of us, right? So if you listen to the show, you get to meet all these amazing people the same way I do. Get to get into their heads, hear them explain their ideas, hear their stories, a little bit of emotion every now and then. But mostly it's kind of cerebral. I said to him at the beginning, listen, dude, I'm nervous to interview you because I feel like everything I'm going to talk about is going to be so boring to you. Anyway, he immediately put me at ease. And then last night at this dinner, he starts off by saying, does anyone know a really good dirty limerick?
Oh.
And I was like, yes, I do know some dirty limericks. So I shall share my opening limerick. Well, it wasn't my opening because everybody did one. And there were about 14 of us at dinner. It's amazing how resourceful people are when it comes to remembering limericks.
Well, did most of them start with "there was a woman from"?
Yeah, a lot of them did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my favorite one is there once was a girl from Devizes who had tits of two different sizes. Yes. One was quite small, almost nothing at all, but the other was big and won prizes. Yes. So after they'd all done theirs, someone said to Pumi and Muzi Kuzwayo, who were there, don't you know a limerick in Zulu? And they said, no. And I said, I do.
Oh.
But not in Zulu, but it's a Zulu-related limerick. It goes like this. It was taught to me by my one ex-girlfriend's father. There once was a girl called Unati who went to a fancy dress party. She said to her Reggie, you can play around the edgy, but ikona fagalo pagat. Right? So I thought that was quite good.
Yeah, a nice comeback.
Anyway, I mean, yeah. So things flowed. It was very good. And after that, people relax and they start talking. And this friend of mine has an autistic son, and so does Eric. So they bonded on that front and talked about AI and all kinds of cool stuff. And there was a little bit of politics, which was nice because people wanted to talk politics and quite a lot about South Africa. And he says, and I agree with him, South Africa is tremendously important. I mean, we have things to teach the rest of the world from our own history and the way that we've dealt with things. And we have things to learn, and we can learn them faster than the rest of the world. But what I found fascinating is that Eric and his wife have just spent 2 weeks on St. Helena, which is this barren island. Well, I thought it was barren, clearly isn't. This island that's the second most remote place on Earth. Mm. So it will take you longer to get there from anywhere than it will to get to almost any other place from anywhere. So, I mean, it's where they imprisoned Napoleon for his final years. He died there at Longwood House. But St. Helena is very, very interesting. And I didn't think it would be. I thought, like, right, why are these people there? Anyway, they weren't affected by COVID at all in St. Helena.
Oh, right.
They basically didn't allow any ships to dock. You had a quarantine period of 2 weeks, but no one wore masks. They didn't bother. They partied all the way through. And he said, the fact that you South Africans don't know about St. Helena, you don't travel there, is a disgrace. He said, it's amazing.
So wait, it's a remote British,
here we go, Leanne,
overseas territory.
Leanne, the researcher, has taken over. Go on.
Volcanic and tropical island.
Mm-hmm.
South Atlantic Ocean, 1,874 kilometers west of mainland Africa.
Right. Two things you can do to get there. One, very unpleasant. The other one, sometimes fraught with danger. So okay, it's really locked off from the rest of the world in some ways. Long before we have to go to Mars, we must go to St. Helena, basically.
So we're obviously either boating or flying there.
Right. There's only one flight that goes there. I think it's once a week from Johannesburg. So you have to pass through Johannesburg to get there. They have an airport, which was only built in 2020. It's finished in 2020. Before that, there was a mailing ship, a British mailing ship. Went there every 2 months.
So, what, just for mail?
Yeah, and before that was every 6 months. So if you found yourself in St. Helena, you were there for 6 months.
Wow.
There was no getting off for another 6 months. You know, I mean, fascinating place. So apparently the climate there is variable as hell. You could literally be in the Scottish mountains at some point, and then you drive for 10 minutes and you're in a tropical rainforest. You drive another 10 minutes and you're in desert. So even though it's small, there's a lot that happens there. I mean, it's the size of San Francisco, I was told.
Okay.
And truly an interesting place. Like, there's another thing that's interesting about it, which I don't want to steal all the thunder of the Eric Weinstein interview, but he said it's also kind of a post-identity place, because it's ironic talking about this after I discussed identity with Zuby, because everyone is like coffee-colored. And no one is uptight about slavery because their ancestors were slaves, but also the masters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all like mixed up, and it could be a glimpse of what the future looks like. So really fascinating place. And therefore, I think justifiably something that's now on my agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Hmm? And quite a big population, 4,439. Right. I thought there were going to be about three people there.
Well, I think that those ones probably all related.
Okay.
So bringing in some fresh genes would probably be it. And the average age there is old,
okay,
like in their 70s, because the young people just leave.
Mm.
And then they come back when they have lots of money. Oh. So interesting, right?
Fascinating.
Okay, so that was last night and yesterday during the day. Saturday, I again dragged this friend of mine from America, and then another friend of mine, she came up from KZN, and they were jamming on Friday night with instruments. Now, this very clever friend of mine can play any instrument. Like, you put him, he was sitting in front of a keyboard and started playing, but like properly, like a classical pianist. And then he picked up a bass guitar, and then he was playing the bass while doing the drums with his feet.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like talent. You talk about people who are referred to as a polymath or, you know, a Renaissance man. This guy really is like that. And again, I'm like, I'm so lucky that I've got smart friends like this. Mm. I honestly feel very stupid sometimes around them, but I'm in wonder.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter to me that I'm stupid. I'm so happy to be around people who are truly brilliant that I don't mind being the dumbest man in the room. In fact, if I'm the dumbest man in the room, it's like I like being the ugliest person in the room. Means everyone else is amazing, right? Yeah. So then I'm in the right room.
But also you need to, it's nice to have a certain type of dumb, a little bit of dumb.
Mm.
It gets you through life. You don't think too deeply about things. I always found like super fit people who really train hard and work on their bodies and it's all they're into.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I wished that I had their kind of mindset because you don't think, are these calories really burning off? What did I eat yesterday? How am I going to do this today? Why is this sore? They just do. They get up and do.
Yeah. Look, I suppose you could argue there's that kind of idea that people who are really severely mentally impaired are sometimes the happiest people. Because they're not
blissful ignorance.
You know, they're not thinking about stressing themselves out about everything and worrying about tomorrow. Or like, am I doing the right thing? Am I successful? Am I a failure? They're like, yeah. Give you a hug when they see you, and then they're like, okay.
It's like my aunt. She had a fit when she was younger, a little child from whooping cough, and they lived on the mines, so she didn't get to hospital on time. And
right, so it's oxygen deprivation.
Deprivation, right. A traumatic brain injury, basically. Uh-huh. She's now she's nearly 70, and she's absolutely happy. Death doesn't bother her at all.
Yeah.
She said to me the other day, my budgie was lying on the bottom of the bird tray for a while last night.
Right.
And I thought it's going to die before I wake up. And it did. It died. I said, where is it?
Yeah.
And I said, did you bury it somewhere? She said, no, I'll show you. While she was walking to spa, she just tossed it into somebody's ground cover.
And she was fine.
And she got out and checked. She said, the ants are getting to it now.
And she moved on, right?
She's absolutely. Like, she went to got another ignorance. Two.
Listen, there's something to be said for it. So, you know, everything is a trade-off. And this is what the great Thomas Sowell, who's probably America's foremost economist and certainly one of the great intellectuals who is still alive. He's in his 90s now. I mean, Thomas Sowell, by anyone's account, should have been president of the United States, but he would never have gone into politics. Just so clear about everything. He always says everything in life is a trade-off. There are no such things as binary options.
Mm.
If you want lots of this, you get a little of that. If you want a little of this, you get a lot of that, and so on. So I think that's probably the way to look at things. Plus, there's some thoroughly useful insights that I kind of got from just listening to some people over the course of the last 2 or 3 days. The friends who we went to, I've spoken sometimes about my friend who is a subsistence advocate. So he advocates in law, but only enough to pay his bills. The rest of his time he spends gaming and with his son and his wife. And so he works, he's very good at this. He can apportion exactly in his head how much advocating he has to do. And then the rest of the time he just fucks around.
Yeah.
Sounds good. You know, the rest of us would be like, well, how much more money can I make? And how much more could I do work-wise? He's like, no, that's just my way to make money. And he and his wife are just very inspiring people because they have raised this extremely bright little child. And the two of them have a room in their house. This is where we were like jamming on Friday night. A room underneath their house, which is like a party room. I mean,
like not a sex dungeon.
No, it's a party room. It's like got disco lights and music and speakers and instruments and like all kinds of cool shit. And it's always there ready to go. It can also be a cinema if that's what you want it to be. But I mean, they're just very odd people. And again, I'm just so lucky that I've got these very odd friends in my life who I could never spend a minute around any of them and go, yeah, that's enough for a couple of weeks. It's always exciting to be around them. So yeah, very, very stimulating weekend. If I'm a little bit manic today, that's why. I see Mapadima says here, you know, I'm not so excited about the Wednesday holiday. Yes, we have a Wednesday holiday because it's during the week. Well, you'll be excited when you finished a long day on Tuesday and you're like, I can take tomorrow off and do nothing. Did you do anything to mark Freedom Day on Saturday?
No. In fact, I forgot about it until the news started coming in and the news clips and what Cyril Ramaphosa had said. And obviously everything's completely politically laced and politically charged at the moment.
So you listened to what Cyril Ramaphosa said? That's interesting.
No, I mean, I just saw
I don't know anyone who listened to him.
No, I didn't. Certainly
that would have been a downer on an otherwise great weekend, right?
I just saw, typed out little bits of what he'd been saying. Mm-hmm. And I was really disinterested. But that's only when I realized that it was actually Freedom Day. Something wrong with us not benefiting from a Saturday public holiday.
Yeah,
Friday,
it does feel like you've been cheated a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Because normally a public holiday, even for the people who don't give a damn about the historical significance or what you're trying to do on that day, what it means, even them, they're like, well, if we get the public holiday, then we'll maybe spend a minute thinking about it. Mm. And that's a lot for government to ask you to spend a whole minute of your day. But they could have at least given us the day. You know, Friday, as you say, that would have been nice. I did notice, and it's worth remarking just for a second, about the actual relevance of Freedom Day. And 30 years after that hell of an important day, where I remember I was in high school, and I remember the queues and this enormous, meaningful, important activity that everyone took part in. Everyone who could vote. I was too young to vote. And I remember what a big deal it was for people on that day. And then I think, you know, there are people growing up now who just couldn't be bothered to vote.
So apathetic.
I'm like, okay, we've discussed this. I'm not going to gild the lily now and go over it again. I had a rant last week about how they should all just be like shipped off to Antarctica or something because they're just ungrateful. And you think about the sacrifices. And I saw last night at our dinner, one of Madiba's granddaughters, who, and we talked about this a little bit, because we are so quick to just move on. And like now we find new things to bitch about, right? So it's the electricity and it's the water and it's how bad our education system is and how little progress we've made here or there or anywhere else. And I'm certainly not doing an ANC good story to tell. By the way, we've got Panyaza Lesufi in on Thursday to represent the ANC in our long litany of political parties. We'll get to that with Pumi later this week. But I do think it's worth taking stock. Like, we really have an extraordinary story in this country. And just because we have short memories and we are now so entitled as a nation, I'm not saying as individuals, it feels to me like we've just got to take a deep breath and look at how far we've come, realize that we are not the shittest place on earth, because some people really believe this is the shittiest place on earth. Mm. And I think it is an extremely difficult place to live if you have no money. I think it is one of the toughest places in not just the world as it is right now, but in time to live, because there's this added ugliness, which we've never had to deal with before, where you may be poor and you may not have anything, but now you get to see what you're missing out on, which is cruel, right? Mm. So I think that's something we don't take any stock of. I think it can be tremendous happiness in poverty if you don't know that you're poor. I mean, like, there was a stage when I was a kid where we didn't have a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I could roam freely. And I could build swings in trees. And I didn't feel hard done by just because we didn't have material wealth. Mm. But I think it's much harder when you're seeing, you know, yachts and planes and holidays and celebrities and all this nonsense on your phone all the time. Mm. And that's your feed. And you're living in squalor. I think that's extra hard.
Yeah.
but we're not the worst place. There are many, many worse places. And that's not to say that we aren't good either. There are some things that we do extremely well. And I think we deserve a little bit of credit for that. And 30 years after democracy first came in a real way to this country, take a moment to just have a little bit of, you know, joy.
Pride.
A little bit of pride.
Yeah.
And I'm not a nationalist. You know this. I'm probably not even a patriot anymore. And that's saying something, because I used to be. Mm. I still can find it in me to be proud of this place and to celebrate the things that we do well. I think it's worth just a little reflection, you know?
No, 100%.
Don't want to go too far down that road, but there we are. Mm. And you say your weekend was just nothing. No pressure.
Yeah, I'm really battling to get the work-life balance thing right. 7 months into a new job and still going full steam ahead.
You know what I think you need? I want to organize you a workplace romance.
I don't know if I can handle anything more.
Come on, Leanne. Imagine getting to the office every day. And there's some guy you're really into. Come on. No?
I don't know if I want the extra stuff.
All right. Well, I tried. She's definitely devoid of feelings. She's given up. She's shut down the shop.
No,
she's shut down the shop.
Not.
She's decided it's all closed. Cobwebs.
I promise. In fact, I sat down with my brother about 2 weeks ago and I said to him, I think I might be ready to start look at maybe dating.
Oh, this is a development.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
I just feel like things have, you know, almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I've got the basics sorted out now that I was just kind of trading water before.
Sure.
And those things are now sorted out. And you naturally start moving on to the next need, the next tier of the pyramid. And yeah, I was actually also talking to my cousin 2 days ago. She like me, has been single most, you know, for the last few years. And we were remembering that in China, you have that service where you can hire someone just to cuddle with.
Right.
Nothing more is required or expected. And she was, at first she said, oh, gross. And then I said, no, imagine someone saying to you, like, how was your day? You know, what have you been up to? You look great today. You know, what are your plans for tomorrow? Just because you do, you end up missing out on those things a little bit.
Oh, well, don't worry. We've got the audience to fill that gap for us. Listen to what Zach says. Gareth, my 9-year-old, grew up with me watching the Gareth Cliff Show and now just asked, Daddy, why is the man looking old now? Oh, fuck. Do they see what we don't? Because she said the same with me in the past few weeks. Zach, just tell your 9-year-old to shut the fuck up. All right, mind her own fucking business.
Yeah, but it's good. She needs to learn that that's what happens. That's life.
Leanne is beautiful, by the way, says Mapelo, and very funny as well.
Oh.
Yeah, so you get a compliment. That's nice. Ricky says, I've been in Australia for almost 2 years now. One thing I can say is the South African people, the culture, the patriotism, unmatched. Those are the things that I miss every day. Okay.
Yeah, there's something entirely unique about South Africa that you can't find anywhere else. This shared experience.
My friend Charles said, he's been doing some work here for one of the big corporations, and he said, this is a much more evolved and friendly place when it comes to diversity and people actually meeting each other as human beings and exchanging greetings. He said he walked into a boardroom last week. And again, sometimes it's good to have a fresh perspective from someone who doesn't live here. Mm. This is where I say we're not the shittest place, right? He said, in America, there's such tension now around race, culture, language, ethnicity, immigration, patriotism, the Constitution, politics. If you're a Trump supporter, you can't sit at a table with a Biden supporter. Mm. And he said, here, he went into a boardroom last week, and he said, people hug each other, they greet, they know each other's names, they know each other's kids' names. They talk like old friends. And he said, that just does not happen in America right now.
Mm.
And he's like American now. He's not South African anymore. And I thought that was a really cool observation. But to go back to your thing about like someone to sleep next to or to ask how your day was.
Someone just to acknowledge your presence every now and then.
Well, yeah, you know how I feel. Like,
yeah, look,
know,
I, that's favorite why I say thing literally.
Is to be on my, like I do not want to wake up in the morning and there's someone else in the bed with me. But I have said that if I could find someone who was able to just put me to sleep every night with a back tickle, I would be totally happy.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I'd sign
about.
Up for that for life. And then after I've fallen asleep, they must just disappear and I mustn't see them again until the next back tickle is required. Get out of my life, right? So, yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah.
I'd rather be in South Africa than all the war-stricken countries, says Snipes. I mean, Biden closed varsities for a year in the U.S. because of Israel-Palestine. No one mentions Sudan besides Al Jazeera and J.J. Cornish. Yeah, you make a good point, Snipes. Listen, if you look at the world, there are always going to be worse places. I watched a brilliant bit of a documentary. I didn't watch the whole thing because I think it's in like four episodes. Do you know Michael Palin from Monty Python?
Mm.
So he does a travel show. He doesn't do comedy at all anymore. And I saw an interview with John Cleese, also of Monty Python, the other day, who said, oh, I was watching Michael Palin's dreary and boring travel show the other day. He's very disparaging about it, which I love. But I thought that this was a great show because he went to Iraq.
Okay.
No.
It's like we're not all eagerly packing up to go.
I would now. That would interest me because it's ancient Mesopotamia, right? You could also go and see like Uday and Qusay Hussein's palace that they lived in, Saddam's children, right? I found this just remarkable. So Michael Palin, first of all, to get into Iraq pretty much from anywhere is...
I was going to say, how do you even do
it? Tough work. And then he goes to Mosul, where there was huge fighting. I mean, ISIS were only kind of stamped out there in 2013, 14. It's not that long ago. And the buildings are all burnt out and bombed out, and there's more rubble than there is building.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to tell what the fresh rubble and what the old rubble is. But what a place, huh? I mean, there's history that's just eons deep. And the people are resilient. There are cafes on the banks of the Tigris River, which he visited, where people are sitting there with hublies, hookah pipes, smoking. Obviously, they don't drink. It's a very, very strict Muslim country even now. You know, they had ISIS, for heaven's sake, who enforced in that particular part of Kurdistan a very, very intolerant and orthodox regime. But these people are, they're living their lives. He went to a tailor. He went to a tailor's shop in Erbil, called Mr. Erbil. You can look it up on the internet. He had a jacket made, but like a really beautifully made English tailor level Savile Row jacket. And I marvel at the fact that there are people who, in a place that has up to just a couple of weeks ago, really, in the span of time, it feels like just a little while ago, because we all grew up with kind of Iraq in the background, right? And he interviews this woman about growing up during that time. And she talks about the Kurdish ethnic cleansing that Saddam Hussein did. And then he attends this... Nowruz, which is like New Year in Kurdistan. And they all go up onto the hills with torches and fireworks. And you think, hell, if the people of northern Iraq can get their shit together to the degree that they feel a nationhood, and that people can make a living for themselves, they can do cool things, they can live their lives, they can have tailor shops or whatever else it is. Power to them, man.
Clearly no PTSD there with the fireworks.
Yeah. I mean, that's I was just blown away. I think what a phenomenal story.
Yeah.
So again, Tracy agrees with me. She saw it too. Michael Palin's show in Iraq was incredible. That tragedy he told of the slaughter along the river was heartbreaking. Yeah, well, this is where Saddam Hussein actually murdered a bunch of Kurds. And, you know, there's the old adage, it's not very funny, but it's poetic, that Saddam had Kurds in his way.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, it was well known that despite the fact that America may have embellished the idea of weapons of mass destruction, you remember Colin Powell going up in front of the UN and talking about chemical and biological weapons, and this is why we've got to take on Saddam. Turns out that probably wasn't true, and that's not a controversial thing to say, but nonetheless, he was a genocidal maniac. And if you go on the internet, you can find something really interesting.
Oh, yeah?
You will find a video which is like a documentary on the exact moment that Saddam seized power. You can watch a video of him sitting in parliament with the Ba'athist party, his party. And the exact moment he becomes a dictator is the moment that he, after making a speech about nationalism and all the rest, he does this thing where he points to some guy in the crowd and he says, "You did this, did that, stole this, stole that." And soldiers come in. And they frog march this poor asshole outside. Mm. And then he points to another guy and they come and get him. And he points to a couple. And now, like, the room is thinning out and the people in it are getting ever more kind of uncomfortable and shifting in their chairs. And suddenly someone stands up and goes, "Saddam Hussein is the sun and the moon and the light of Iraq.
Oh, goodness.
And thank God for him." And then another guy, because these are now all the central committee members who know that they could be on that list too, right? They have to pledge their allegiance. At that moment, they all become his servants and he becomes the leader. And there's no turning back. And they all suddenly realize what's happened. Sure. There's no room for dissent anymore. And then to seal the deal, and the part that you won't find any footage of, is he sends the people that remain, who are now devoted to him, obviously, in fear of their lives, but just to make sure they don't change their mind, he sends them out. They must take a gun and shoot the bad guys who he's already put out there. So the ones who were accused are standing outside against a wall, and the ones who made it through without having to be accused must now shoot them. So he involves them in the plot. Now there's no turning back.
Goodness me.
Hell of a story, huh?
Jeez.
Gives me goosebumps when I think about it. Anyway, that's enough of the heavy stuff for this morning. Look who's here. It's James.
Mora.
From the sublime to the ridiculous. All right. So, James, we had quite a lot of sport over the weekend. I would be lying to you if I said I paid any attention to any of it. So, update me.
I will do just that.
Good.
As usual.
And listen, can we get rid of this terrible The Gareth Cliff Show that's all bright behind me?
It is on the cards.
Thank you.
It's on the cards.
Thank God. It looks like... It looks terrible.
You don't like your name in big flashy lights.
No, I mean, why would anyone be here if they had no idea who I was?
That's fair.
And
that's
I think fair. We can just have it a little more elegant.
Right.
Let's work. Okay. Just work on that.
That'll be on the list for today.
Back to the sport.
I got you. So we'll start with the football as usual. I feel like every time I'm coming here, it's getting a lot worse for Liverpool Football Club.
Is that bad news for you?
It is bad news for me. You could officially say...
Did you cry?
A little bit. Quite a lot, actually. I won't lie to you.
Okay, go on.
You could officially say we're out of the title race. As of this weekend, we drew 2-2 to West Ham. Chelsea beat Aston Villa. Chelsea drew to Aston Villa 2-2. Arsenal beat Spurs 3-2. What all of that means is that Arsenal are now top of the log by 1 point, City behind them by another point, and Liverpool have fallen behind by like 5. So we're officially out of it. It's not looking good for us. And the potential new winners of the Premier League could be Arsenal or Manchester City. So that'll be interesting. Hopefully not Arsenal, because that would be quite unbearable. sticking with the football, Sundowns are out of the CAF Champions League. They lost 1-0 to Esperance Tunis. Tough luck for them. Moving on to the rugby, the URC. As expected, the Bulls bounced back in a big way, thrashing Ospreys.
Yes, Ben predicted this.
Yeah.
Yep. And of course, this little sports update is brought to you by Superbets. And why I refer to them now is because Ben said if you take a little gamble on them, you could do quite well. He was right.
Yeah,
you would. He said they were going to come back strong.
And they did. 61-24 was that scoreline there. Yeah, pretty big for them. The Stormers were also equally impressive in dispatching of Leinster. But the Lions lost out against Munster 13-33. With Leinster getting 0 points from their last two games, Glasgow is now top of the URC log. And then lastly, in the MotoGP, it was the Spanish MotoGP.
Before we move on, JP wants to know, James, what happened between Salah and Klopp? Trouble in paradise?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I actually have no idea. They haven't released the mic audio as far as I'm aware. But basically what's happened, to give you guys context, is not the UK, Gareth, but Mo Salah was coming off the bench for Liverpool. There was a bit of a back and forth.
Oh, I thought they were names of donkeys. Sorry. Carry on.
No, one's the coach. One is the player. One of them is the star player, actually. They had a bit of a back and forth on the side of the field.
Oh, so there was an argument, a visible bit of...
altercation.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I'm not happy.
Bit of argy-bargy on the sidelines, okay?
And very exciting. And what makes it worse is Salah's like the star man for Liverpool, and you don't want to see the star man and the coach having a go at each other.
So. No.
I'm not sure just yet, JP. I don't know if the audio has been released because they do have touchline mics these days. So I'm not sure. Hopefully not too bad.
But it looked bad.
It looked pretty bad. Klopp is out the door at the end of the season anyway. And judging by this weekend, probably Salah is also. So bad to worse for Liverpool every time I come into the set. Lastly, MotoGP, Spanish MotoGP this weekend. Brad Binder finished in sixth. Francesco Bagnaia won. He came first with Bastianini coming in fifth. And that is the sport.
Mapelo says, James, can you start with South African games for once in your reporting?
I will. I will next week, I promise.
Well, I can tell you that SuperSport United played, I think it was Kaizer Chiefs, and lost 2-0 or 2-1.
Brought more South African sport.
I found somebody in my office, Gen Z.
Oh, yeah.
Who, when I mentioned SuperSport United, because one of the brands I work for sponsors them, she said, I honestly thought there were just two local soccer teams. I thought they were Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates. So I said, did you think that they were playing each other all along?
Just them.
I honestly didn't know.
Didn't even know about Sundowns.
And then later on she said, but I think there was a third Sundowns. Yeah. I said, no, look, there are a few.
All right.
There's a couple.
Yeah.
There's a couple of leagues too.
Okay, well, somebody says here, Sanele says, Gareth took some pointers from Saddam. He's dictator to James this morning. Yeah, watch the hell out, right?
It is what it is. Yeah. I'll just fall into line as well.
I do agree with Hadmin that my logo here behind us looks like a 90s nightclub sign. See? Not just me who feels that way.
We'll change it.
Listen, we got so much to still do. Considering, you know, last week was our first ever green screen show. Mm. We still haven't even scratched the surface on the other stuff that we can do, which I'm excited to show you. But we're not going to rush things. We're going to settle in and make it work. And for many people who are listening on audio only, none of this matters. The people who are listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever. That's cool. You just stick with us.
Can I just say though that if you are still on the audio version, I think the video version is about to get a whole lot better.
Well, it's probably a good time for you to switch over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let us have your feedback because we do want to know what you think about it. And if you have any suggestions, tell us about that too. I'll just ignore them, but James might take them seriously. All right, and don't forget that we do sport every Friday with Ben, and then we check in on those results on a Monday with James, and Superbets are the people who make that possible. They support responsible gambling, Leanne, strictly no under 18s, winners know when to stop. The South African Responsible Gambling Foundation's toll-free counseling hotline is 0800-006-008. Thank you, James. Very good. We've got Dr. Hanan joining us shortly. It'll be the first time we have him on the show.
Ah.
Make sure that we can hear him there, James.
I'm going to do my best.
No, please, don't screw it up. It's very important for us, all right? Very, very good. And then here's a little update from JP. He says, after that game in question, Salah walked past reporters and said, if I speak, there will be fire. So that's how we know there's some... You see, now suddenly I'm interested.
Like suddenly, you like a bit of a, suddenly, I love a bit of fight.
I love a bit of conflict. Yeah. Have you noticed? Yeah,
you
it's a good thing. How long until smell-o-vision? Ugh. I don't know if I ever want TV with smell.
Oh, that sort of smell. Oh, no. No, thank you.
No, that's not something I'm interested in. Let's leave it.
Unless it's a cooking show or something. Yeah.
Even.
I know, that's not your
Because that would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand why anyone would watch a cooking show.
I should not have said cooking show.
I wish you hadn't brought Diamond around.
Oh, my God, I know.
So, because what's the point? If you can't eat the stuff, I don't see the point of watching other people make stuff that you're never going to eat. Who cares? What you think? You think you're going to go into your kitchen straight afterwards? Because who's that baking woman?
Nigella, maybe?
I don't know. Some putzfrau who makes stuff in her kitchen. I don't know. Stuff that I'm totally disinterested in. That the stuff rises in the, I don't know, bread or cake or who the hell knows the difference. Anyway,
stuff that rises in
this
the
woman,
oven.
And then she cooks the stuff. She goes, "Oh, it smells so wonderful!" And I'm like, "For you," but I don't want to smell it if I can't eat it until they deliver the cake to my house straight after that putzfrau's made it. I'm not interested. Okay,
yeah.
Eating is a singularly real world experience. There is no virtual world equivalent, and I don't think there ever will be, no matter how many. You could plug 100 things into people.
Mm.
It's not going to work. And you know smell is way more complicated than taste. Because taste is informed by smell.
Yes.
Like taste is downstream from smell. So only if you can smell certain things can you taste them. All right, there's my rant.
I'm thinking of the horrible things as well. And you mentioned downstream.
Oh, absolutely. Like eventually there's going to be really bad things.
Mm.
That people are going to just suddenly...
I mean, imagine watching that Dharma series with Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh.
When the police walked in and opened up the barrels in his bedroom.
Mm.
there's some really bad things that could happen.
Mm. You should watch it. It's a show called Is It Cake?
Yes, there is that.
Oh, please.
Where it looks like a glass or a cell phone or a laptop. And you've got to guess if it's cake or not. It's so hyper-realistic.
Okay.
Oh, that you might enjoy because it's from artistic.
Yeah,
point
I think
of
that's.
View.
I mean, it requires an enormous amount of like
huge skill.
Yeah,
yeah.
Talent, skill, ability to fool people. It's like a trompe l'œil art, where you think something is 3D, but it isn't.
Mm.
It's almost like that. My niece says you're an obol lol. Okay, I'm not sure I understand that. Is your niece like also? A bit of a slow adult. I'm not. Almost every day, the first person I see is Gareth from my bed. Very creepy, says Mapelo.
Oh, wow.
Well,
okay.
You know what?
It's your choice, you know?
Yeah. Welcome. Welcome to my world. Gordon Ramsay is entertaining, says somebody. Naked Goose.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. I like him. I think he'd be fun to spend time with because I think he's very rude.
I hardly watch him cook anymore. I see him more in... sort of
shouting.
No, he's got this show where he trains people
shouting.
Within the food and drink or beverage industry.
Doesn't he go into like restaurants and then help them run them better?
That's also old.
Oh.
So now he's got his own thing where he puts everything behind one person who wins out of, say, 10, who are marketing some kind of new beverage that they've developed or, you know, so it's like a business show.
Where's Dr. Hanan? I mean, really, you come in here, do the sports results, and then what must we do? Tit about for the next hour while you're meant to get Dr. Hanan on. There he is. I can see him. I'll add him. Here we go. Hey, Doc.
Hey, guys.
What's happening?
Love the background. Sure, congrats.
I like it. You must come in one morning.
Definitely. I'm in.
I'm going to spend some time with you in here.
Love that.
All right, so what are we talking about today? Let's have a look, because we always get emails from people who have all kinds of issues in their lives. Of course, Dr. Hanan is our live-in psychologist. He's our shrink. We get on the sofa with him once a week, and he helps us iron out our problems. So here's a question for you on email, Doc. I've been through a breakup, and during this time, I moved back with my parents. My ex and I have started talking again, and we want to give our relationship a second chance. Only problem is my family and friends might not approve of this, because during our time apart, I did the stupid thing of venting and crying about my ex with them. What can I do to make them feel at ease about our decision and coping with the aftermath of them not approving of us getting back together?
Oh, because now you don't actually have to just convince yourself and your partner. Now you've got to convince everyone else that things have changed.
Well, I mean, this is such a disaster. It's like when you know, when people break up and you take a side and then they end up getting back together.
Yeah. I know, yeah. It's very common. Then you pick a side and your friends start bad-mouthing him as well, and they say, well, you shouldn't have been with him. He was an asshole to begin with, and so glad that you've broken up, and they pile on the argument of why the breakup is so good, and then you end up doing the U-turn method, and you get back together, and now you have to explain why you were wrong in terms of your assessment of the relationship. So it's all too common, and I hear this quite often, and I think lesson number one is don't talk bad about pretty much anybody. I mean, don't waste your time bad mouthing anybody, because you don't know how that might come back and bite you. But number two, I always say human beings are incredible at adapting. We're terrible at predicting, but we are amazing at adapting. So if the question is, how do I get my friends to accept my new relationship with this new person? First of all, I would say to you, the person that got back together, make sure you're getting back for the right reasons. That wasn't the question, but make sure you're getting back together for the right reason, not because you're lonely and not because you miss him and not because your feelings tell you to go right back. We know what we all feel about feelings. Make sure you're getting back in the relationship because it's the right relationship. Make sure you're getting back into the relationship because the things that you've broken up or the reasons why you've broken up in the first place are no longer there, and they're resolved, and you've developed, and you've improved in the relationship, and so is your partner. But assuming you're getting back into the relationship for the right reasons, just get back into it and explain to your closest friends of why things are different. But your friends will adapt. As long as they see your relationship improving and being better, and you being treated in a way that you deserve to be treated, I have no doubt that your friends will adapt. Don't make excuses. Explain. But just get back into the relationship and show your friends through experience of why this relationship is right.
So the two things here. The first one is that, like, I'm really happy if any of my friends are in a happy relationship. And however that person makes them happy, I forgive whatever misgivings I might have about them. I think that's probably the healthy approach for the friends. But there's another thing, is this constant oversharing. And I kind of blame TV talk shows in the 90s and 2000s. I blame social media, that everybody feels they need to just share everything. All how about you shut up and keep it to yourself until you've figured out what the hell you want to do before you go and make everybody else aware of how you're having issues with your girlfriend or your wife. This, by the way, is one of the reasons I don't play golf, because I don't want to hear the other guys moaning about their wives. I first of all find it very, very boring, but I also find it disloyal. I'm like, you keep that to yourself until you and she have ironed out some of your petty differences. And then come and play golf or have fun with the rest of your mates without your baggage. This is not an appointment with Dr. Hanan. Am I right?
Gareth, you are right. I actually think a lot of people share because they want to seem like part of the group. They want a sense of acknowledgement and a sense of belonging, and they think it's cool. But I want to tell everybody, whenever you speak badly about somebody in your inner circle, or when you speak badly about somebody that you've left, it sounds ugly. It's just ugly on you. It doesn't sound pretty. I completely agree with you. It's disloyal and completely disrespectful. And if anything, it doesn't discredit them. It devalues you. It discredits you. Yeah. It makes you look ugly and cheap. So don't talk badly about anybody, because there's no real value in that for you. And secondly, nobody really cares. And thirdly, it might come back to backfire, might backfire on you, especially when you make a U-turn and reverse your decision and go back to that relationship. Imagine, to your point, imagine going out to play golf and you speak so badly about your wife and why your wife is this and why your wife is that. And then you go out for dinner with your wife and you're all huggy and holding hands. How disingenuous does it look when you've just spoken so badly about your partner at home, and then suddenly you're lovey-dovey in person? It makes you look cheap.
And I love the way some like fat, average-looking, uninteresting guy on a golf course is busy giving the one woman in the world who would condescend to love him shit. I mean, like, how dare that guy, you know? I mean, first of all, I'm not friends with any people like that. But if I were, I'd really question my own sanity. 100%. But like, who's this guy think he is? Was he Brad Pitt? His big bupens and his, you know, his desire to drink 23 beers in the afternoon because he thinks he's unhappy. What is that?
You know, I always say if you want a true personality test, don't go online and don't go do these psychometric tests. If you truly want to know what you are and who you are, just look at the people that you hang around with. They are your true mirror of who you are. And if you're hanging around those people that are speaking badly about their loved ones at home, whether it's their partners or even business partners or their colleagues, then that's the person that you are as well. And ask yourself, do I really want to hang around with those kind of individuals that are disloyal? And again, it doesn't make the people that you talk about look ugly. It makes you look completely cheap and devalued.
All right. One quick follow-up to this. Is it okay that a couple of weeks ago, I and three of my very good friends, I forced them to say an obituary to me in advance? Like, this sounds a bit odd, but give me a moment to explain. So, you know, when you're dead, you don't really have the ability to hear what people might say about you. And maybe we'd been drinking a bit. Okay. And I felt like it was the appropriate time to make them work a bit.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, you now let's earn each other's friendships again, because sometimes you just take it all for granted. I said to them, all right, everyone here, because we all like each other. There are only four of us at that point. I'm like, you all have to say what you would say if we were dead right now. And let's see how good you are at this. Also, there would be maybe one or two surprise and quite poetic insights.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there've been people who have faked their own deaths in order to find out.
Well, I didn't want to do that. That sounds like a lot of work. But
yeah, it does.
I also involved myself in it by saying something about each of them too. I found it to be a very, very cool exercise. Now, I'm not saying that this is something everybody should do, because maybe some people are a bit emotional and they wouldn't handle it. And it's also kind of a devastating thing for your friends to say, right, what would you say if I was dead?
Yeah.
But it actually turned out to be a fascinating exercise. Would you recommend this to other people? And do you think I did the right thing?
So I think it's really interesting on a couple of fronts. One, when you ask your friends to do that, you're basically asking for honesty, but let's call it covered with kindness. Because when you've passed, obviously people are going to be very kind about you, but they're going to be kind. And they're going to be honest about
someone's dead.
They're going to be honest about the things that you've done really well and how you've impacted their lives. I think it's a very therapeutic way of not only seeing what your friends would say about you in kind of when you're not around, but also you facing your own mortality, acknowledging that one day this will happen. And maybe those friends are not going to be there, but somebody's going to say something about you. And there's something very therapeutic about acknowledging that life doesn't go on forever. At some point, the lights will be switched off, which allows you then to live your life to the fullest, understanding that we all on a time, on a time period. We're all on a stopwatch. You know, the one huge fallacy that we all live by, or many people live by, is the Peter Pan, let's call it myth of living forever. This notion that this will never end, which actually just stops us from really living our lives to the fullest, because there's always, on Monday, I'll start my life. On Monday, I'll go to the gym. On Monday, I'll take my break. On Monday, I'll be honest with my boss. On Monday, and Monday never comes. But the moment you know that one day the lights will be switched off and that will be the end, actually it puts you on a stopwatch, and you got to live life to the fullest now, because Monday might not come. So I think it's quite an interesting exercise, especially if you do it with the people that are closest to you, people that are kind and people that are honest. Then you get a true reflection of what people would truly say and what people do say about you when you're not around.
Were there any surprises to you?
No, I think they were mostly pleasant about it and like genuinely sad that I had gone.
Was it satisfyingly sad?
Look, I wasn't looking, it wasn't an ego trip. In fact, it was exactly the opposite. I think that was what made it exciting, is that suddenly you are forced to come to terms with why you're actually friends with this person. What is it that kept you in their life and kept them in yours?
It gives you an opportunity to change something if you hear something that you don't like.
Oh, I was so ready to get rid of some of them if they had shitty obituaries. Don't you worry. I can move on very quickly. I did see a comment here, and I don't want you to pay any attention to this, Doc, but I do want to acknowledge the comment. Someone here says, someone has to talk to Gareth about how cruel he is to James.
Oh, he must like stop abusing James or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's nonsense, right? Just a one-word answer is fine, Doc.
That's nonsense.
There we go. There we go. The doctor has spoken. Very good. All right. Very, very good. I stood up to begin my mother-in-law's eulogy, says Joking Atheist. I'd like to thank everyone for being here today. I said, especially the person in the coffin. All right. Dr. Hanan, we will check in with you shortly. Have an excellent week.
Same to you guys. Nice to see you.